All right, guys, so we're going to be focusing on 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 2 through 16 today. So if you could turn there, if you haven't already, and we're going to talk about, remember, he just last week had been talking to them about living separate lives. Now, basically, not to enter into wrong associations, or should I say wrong partnerships with people who are not saved. But he also talked about living separate lives, that you belong to the Lord. So live it like you belong to the Lord. So then that gets into chapter 7, verse 2 through 16. So we're going to see, first of all, some words of encouragement. So let's look at verse 2 through 4. And notice what Paul is saying to them. Make room in your hearts for us. We have wronged no one. We have corrupted no one. We have taken advantage of no one. I do not say this to condemn you, for I said before that you are in our hearts to die together and to live together. I am acting with great boldness towards you. I have great pride in you. I am filled with comfort. In all our affliction, I am overflowing with joy. All right, so let's take a look at some of these words of encouragement here. All right, so first of all, there's this appeal for mutual love, okay? So Paul calls the Corinthians to open their hearts to them. Now you might find that an interesting thing. Well, let me just kind of remind you, remember, even though he started the church, Paul's ministry was to go and start other churches. So he was with them for a while, maybe for a year or so. And then he left as God pushed him on and started other churches. So he's the one who started it. Now in those days, they relied a lot on traveling itinerant ministers who would come and bring some teaching or a word of encouragement. So, for instance, they've experienced the ministry of Apollos, who was really someone that Paul knew, had interacted with. And so in the midst of this, they had others who would come and who would probably, because of their background, being influenced by the Jerusalem church, by some in the Jerusalem church, denied that Paul was even an apostle, would question his ministry. So now the Corinthians are starting to question his ministry. And now they're shutting him off. They're closing their hearts to him. So now he's saying to them, he's saying, open your hearts to me. Okay, so open your hearts to me. So he pleads his integrity in spite of the charges of some. So he's still stressing, I have integrity. I've done no one wrong. Look at that list there. I mean, this is a pretty long list there. Look at what he says there. We have wronged no one. We have corrupted no one. We have taken advantage of no one. So basically, if there's anything that possibly, he's saying, we haven't done anything to any of you. If anything, we've only done good things. Okay? And think about his ministry. When Paul showed up, he could have done this. Did he rely on them to take care of his every need? No, what would he do when he went to an area? Yeah, he was a tent maker. That's right, Mike. He provided for himself because he didn't want to be a burden on the others who were there. Now, could they have taken care of him? Yeah, they could have, because actually the Corinthians were a pretty wealthy congregation. They could have taken care of him. But he decided not to do that. In fact, here's one of the, I thought it's interesting, through my studies I found that one of the accusations against him is the fact that he wouldn't take the help. Those who would come in, who would rely on that help or expect that help, would accuse Paul of not being legitimate because he wouldn't take that help. Isn't that crazy? That's kind of silly, isn't it? You know, that to have somebody come in and not make demands. Do you know what I'm saying? That this is the kind of man that he was, but he's having to fight for his integrity among them because of the accusation of others. Because of the accusation of others. Well, by the way, it was in the news today. I saw it in the news. Two more televangelists got their personal jets. Okay? Who are they in it for? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Now, would Paul need a jet? No, not really, right? He wouldn't even ask for one. You know what I'm saying? Unless he worked and bought it himself with his own money, which I doubt, right? So my point is, he pleads his integrity in spite of the charges. Now, but he's saying it's not an issue of integrity, it's an issue of love. Look with me at what he says in verse 3. He did not tell them this to condemn them. Okay? So, if I have a conversation with Brad here, okay? And Brad's been doing me wrong, okay? And I go to him and I say, you know, Brad, you've been doing this and you've been doing that, and it's been very hurtful to me. Now, how would Brad take what I'm saying to him? How could he take what I'm saying to him?
I'd be hurt.
You'd be hurt if I said that to you? How would Brad take it? How would Brad take me going to him and saying, Brad, you know, you're doing this. I haven't done anything wrong to you. I haven't corrupted you. You know, you're wrong, Brad. Okay? How would Brad take that? There's a couple ways he could take that.
Be on the defensive.
Okay, be on the defensive. Do you think you'd get on the defensive real quick? Most of us would. Wouldn't we, most of us, do that? Boom, get right on the defensive. Yeah, but even if it's true, shame. Okay, you're right, Bruce. So shame is real. Defensiveness is another. And I've known people who've done wrong to get defensive. Okay, but what he's saying here, he's not telling this to condemn him. My purpose, Brad, isn't to tell you that you've done me wrong and I haven't done anything to you and. Isn't to make you feel bad. It's just to help you. It's to get our relationship back where it needs to be, and so forth. So Paul's saying my motives isn't to condemn him. My motives are to help him. Okay? That's what he's saying. My motives, Corinthians, isn't to condemn you. In fact, he's already done that. We're going to see that here in a moment. He's already dealt with them with a very harsh letter. It's actually the true 2 Corinthians. This letter, if we did it in the name of what letter is written, this is actually a third letter. We call it 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians in our New Testament. But it's the third letter that Paul wrote. The second one, we don't have a copy of it. It might be a reason why we don't have a copy of it, is that he was pretty harsh with them. You know what I'm saying? But he's saying, I'm not doing this to make you feel bad. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's not a condemnation thing. It's to help them, all right? To help them. Now, let's go on. Here's what else he says. He stated that the Corinthians were very much a part of his life and love. They were very much a part of his life and love. He's their spiritual father. Do you understand what I'm saying? He's their spiritual father. Now, I think all of us can relate to that, right? If you have kids and you are dealing with them, you're not just trying to condemn them and beat them in, although I know there's some parents who are like that. You're not just trying to condemn them, beat them in the ground, make them feel totally worthless. When you correct them, you're doing it to what? Help them, right? Mold them. And there's always with that an attitude of love, right? So here, that's what he's saying here. They are very much a part of his life and his love. So when he's coming to them and correcting them, you know, that wasn't right what you did there. Your attitude here didn't, that really was, you need to think about that. So he's doing it out of a basis of love and so forth. Well, here again, he's expressing his confidence in them. So Paul's love was unabated and his confidence in them was unimpaired. So even though their, quote, not doing right or not making the right decisions as far as he is concerned, he still had a confidence in them. He still had a trust in them. He still had a belief in them that they would do better. Do you understand what I'm saying? That they would do better. Now, let me tell you about history. History shows us that they did do better when it came to him. They did express repentance. They did respond to Paul. Okay? We know that from church history. But this is like before that, where he's got to kind of deal with some things. Okay? So, he had pride and joy in them despite all of his troubles. Now, by the way, when he's writing this, it's not like he's on vacation in Cancun or some Aegean Greek resort. You know, I've been hearing that in the news lately about a lot of resorts in Greece and people like to go there. But he's not. He's facing persecution. He's facing suffering. He's facing difficulties wherever he goes. And guess, he still has pride and joy in them. He still loves them. He still cares for them. Okay? Now, here is what I want you to see, his confidence. We've already seen that. So now, let's get to the letter of rebuke. This is that what is actual 2 Corinthians, the second letter, that what we're looking at is the third letter. Look with me at verse 5. Even when we came into Macedonia, our bodies had no rest, but we were afflicted at every turn, fighting without, fear within. That's interesting. Fighting without, dealing with fear within, okay? But God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus. Not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he was comforted by you. As he told us of your longing, of your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoice still more. For even if I had made you grieve with my letter, now this is the letter he's talking about, the second letter, I do not regret it. Though I did regret it, for I see that the letter grieved you, though only for a while. As it is, I rejoice, not because you were grieved, but because you were grieved into repenting. For you felt a godly grief, so that you suffered no loss through us. For godly grief produces repentance that leads to salvation without regret, whereas worldly grief produces death. For see what earnestness this godly grief has produced in you, but also what eagerness to clear yourselves, what indignation, what fear, what longing, what zeal, what punishment. At every point, you have proved yourselves innocent in the matter. So, although I wrote to you, it was not for the sake of the one who did wrong, nor for the sake of the one who suffered wrong, but in order that your eagerness for us might be revealed to you in the sight of God. Therefore, we are comforted. And besides our own comfort, we rejoice still more at the joy of Titus, because his spirit has been refreshed by you all. For whatever boasts I made to him about you, I was not put to shame. But just as everything we said to you was true, so also our boasting before Titus proved true. And his affection for you is even greater, as he remembered the obedience of you all and how you received him with fear and trembling. I rejoice because I have complete confidence in you. All right, let's take a look at this. We're going to talk about this letter of rebuke and how they responded. And there are some things we can learn here, okay? So first of all, the report of Titus. He's going to talk about the condition in verse 5, that's in Macedonia. So when Paul arrived in Macedonia, they found circumstances to be difficult. Now, can I point out to you that whenever you read these letters, whether it's from Paul or John or Peter, and they're talking about being a believer in an unbelieving world, do they paint the picture that it's going to be easy? No, not at all. In fact, what they paint is that it's difficult, right? That the world of unbelievers are not going to respond to them well. Okay? They're not going to respond to their faith well. All right? So why do we think that it's that somehow because we believe Jesus, we're exempt and everything should be wonderful today? This is what I'm always confused by. Believers, we have this sense that everything's supposed to be good and that people aren't going to be upset with what we believe, but they are. They are. Why do we get to that place? Maybe you don't have an answer. I don't need an answer. That's just a question that pops in my mind is, man, everything I read tells me it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. But our hope is in who? In Jesus, right? In Jesus. All right, let's go on. They had to deal with the outward pressures as well as the inward fears. It's like a double whammy, isn't it? Outward pressures are bad enough, right? But you could say sometimes the inward fears are even more extreme, right? Because it's the inward fears that don't allow us to sleep at night. It's the inward fears that take away our appetite. It's the inward fears that stress us out. I mean, yeah, it's one thing to have to deal with outward pressures in the immediate, but then when you walk away with that, the inward fears last a long time, and they consume you. So Paul's talking about here that he's having to deal with both, outward pressures, inward fear, okay? Outward pressures, inward fear. So let's talk about the comfort. So Titus was able to bring comfort to Paul with the news of the Corinthians' repentance. Okay, so you remember the first letter? They had a guy who was sleeping with his dad's second wife or whatever. So he was sleeping with his stepmother. And Paul said, that's not even named among the Gentiles. They don't even do that in the world. And you guys are letting this guy get away with it, and you're not doing anything about it. You think maybe, I don't know, maybe in the auspices where we're at grace or we're accepting of people, we want them to come to Jesus moment or whatever. And he said, you need to deal with him and what? Cast him out. Give him over to Satan. Okay, so remember, there were some problems there. Remember when we went through 1 Corinthians, he addressed a lot of problems there, right? When he sent this second letter, he was addressing, obviously, we don't know exactly what, he again was addressing some issues in a harsher way. But now Titus has come back with a report that they have what? Yeah, repented. They've dealt with it. Do you understand? Their attitudes. So that was bringing him comfort, okay? Bringing him comfort. So here's the effects. So Paul did not regret the letter that brought the Corinthian sorrow. You know, he didn't regret that he had to tell him some hard things. Sometimes we have to do that. You know, now in our culture today, we're not supposed to do that, but to be honest with you, sometimes you have to have hard things said to you, right? You know what I'm saying? Because if you're going to acknowledge something and deal with it, you got to have it pointed out. So he doesn't regret the letter. He does regret that he had to write the letter. So he doesn't regret that he wrote it. He just regrets the fact that it came to the point where he had to do it. Do you understand? Because they weren't doing right. And he would hope, I think most of us, I think this is where we are in our culture today, We hope that we can just, oh, it'll get better, but does it ever get better? No. So he didn't want to do it, but he had to. So you say, isn't that a contradiction? He's glad he wrote the letter, but then he didn't like the fact that he had to write the letter? No, I think that's just humanity. Things need to be pointed out. He's glad that he did, but he regrets that he had to write it because it got to that place where he had to say something. So here's his joy concerning the effect, okay? So Paul rejoiced that the letter brought them to a place of repentance. A place of repentance. He calls it godly sorrow. And I think we're going to spend some time here because he talked about godly sorrow and worldly sorrow and the difference. And I'm going to talk to you about what repentance is and what it isn't. Okay, now, first of all, when we talk about repentance, most people in the church today simply think that means confession. It simply means, let's go back to Brad. He and I got this problem, you know, and I approached him out of love about this issue. He's got me wrong. Brad simply saying to me, yeah, George, yeah, I've been wrong about you. I said some wrong things, you know. That's just confession. Okay? Now, we think that that's repentance. That isn't repentance. Because have you noticed, it talks about repentance in some passages, in the very next, it talks about confession, but they're set. Now, confession is part of repentance, but it's not repentance. Repentance is a change of mind, which results in a change of action. So what would happen is, if it was true repentance, a godly sorrow, is that he says, George, I am sorry. But from that point on, he stops saying the stuff about me. And how do I know that? Time reveals that. His actions reveal that. Did you understand? Because there is a difference between godly sorrow and worldly sorrow. So, for instance, here's the progression. Paul outlines the progression of repentance here. All right, so here's what he says. Godly sorrow over sin produces repentance, a change, action. All right, action. Repentance or a change of mind leads to salvation. Leads to salvation. Worldly sorrow only leads to death. All right, so I picked on Brad enough, okay? Let me pick on an imaginary friend now. Let's say Jethro is sitting right here, okay? All right, Jethro, his name isn't Bodine, but he's Jethro, okay? Let's say Jethro is here, and he's been doing the same kind of thing towards me that Brad had done, all right? And I go and I lovingly talk to him about it. And he, unlike Brad, who's a cool cucumber, he's like, oh, I'm so sorry, George. I shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And as a believer, I'd forgive you. But no sooner than I turn my head and maybe I leave the room or a day goes by, he's what? Doing the same thing again, talking about me in that way. What did I just experience with him? Was it godly sorrow? It's worldly sorrow, because godly sorrow leads to what? Repentance, which leads to salvation. Worldly sorrow leads only to what? Death, meaning more sin. Okay? More sin. Yeah, that I think sometimes that's it, Bruce. So I remember, okay, in my earlier years in ministry. So I've been in ministry now for over 30 years. So this is way before I came here. I was involved in a situation where somebody was confronted about a past sin that he had been done to somebody. And it came to a situation where, I mean, it was in our living room. We had this meeting, all the parties were there, and this guy, quote, confessed, said he was sorry, and so everybody's like, okay, wonderful, we forgive you, we go on, okay? Now, at first, can I be honest with you, godly sorrow and worldly sorrow look the same. Does everybody recognize that? Godly sorrow, worldly sorrow look the same. What is the main factor in revealing the difference? What? Okay, change behavior, but how do you know that? Something else has to take place first. That's it, Bruce, time. Time reveals. So in that instance of that individual, I was he was working on a car, and I was visiting him. He was in his garage, and we were talking, and he just got angry because the person that he had hurt and, quote, made a confession to was still hurt by what had happened. And then he tried to trivialize what he did. Now, by the way, is it possible if you've hurt someone that they're going to struggle with the issue of forgiveness for a little bit? Okay? Because forgiveness isn't a one-time event, right? Forgiveness is a process. Forgiveness is a process. So this guy, all he understood is, I thought I dealt with this. She should be over it, or he should be over, whatever. Okay? And at that point, I realized by his actions and attitude to the person that he had hurt, that what I saw before in that room and where we all were there, that was worldly sorrow, not godly sorrow. Do you understand? That wasn't repentance. That was just simply confession. Like you said, I got my hand caught in the cookie jar. You know, I'm sorry, Mom. I was going for the Oreo. I shouldn't have gone for it. You know, and then what? You get caught five times later going for the same, a different Oreo. Do you understand what I'm saying? So there is a difference. So worldly sorrow leads only to death. Now, worldly sorrow does not progress beyond remorse. Okay? Worldly sorrow doesn't progress. Now, when you say mean progress, it doesn't deal with the issue. Okay? It doesn't deal with the issue. You have your hand up, Lori. Yes, that's exactly, great example. Okay, let's take Peter and Judas. Peter denied him three times. Was he forgiven? We know that. Judas betrayed him. Could he have been forgiven? But think about it. Yes, he could have been, but was he seeking? He felt, the text says he felt sorrow of heart. Remorse for what he had done, that he had betrayed an innocent man, and tried to, quote, make amends by, quote, giving back the money. But there was no forgiveness there because it didn't really go beyond that. All right, what were you going to say, John? Yes, that's exactly right. He felt sorry for himself rather than for what he had done. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, that's a perfect example, Lori, of the difference between godly, I would say, Peter, it was godly sorrow, right? And with Judas, that would definitely was worldly sorrow. And boy, talk about the result. It did result in death. Do you know what I'm saying? So, all right, that's really good. All right, now here's the effect on the Corinthians, verse 11. Paul calls them to pay attention to how they were brought to sorrow. So he wants them to pay attention. How did you get to this place of sorrow? They were to recognize what godly sorrow produces in their lives. Now, what godly sorrow should produce in your lives is a sensitivity to the sin. Did you understand? It's a sensitivity to what you're doing so that you can what? Stop. Right? Stop. All right, now let's go on. So again, he's going to talk about the purpose of the letter. He wrote the letter to benefit the Corinthians and their well-being. So again, he's not doing this to beat them down. He's not doing this to destroy them. He's doing this for their own good, for their own well-being, okay? For their own well-being. So he gets more comfort from Titus. How's that? So first of all, Paul was comforted and rejoiced because of Titus' report concerning them. So Titus came back and kind of gave him the lowdown on how they're doing and what they're doing and what they're saying and so forth. So Titus confirmed Paul's prior report concerning the Corinthians. Now this, I think, is interesting. Even though he's had this difficulty with them, he kind of knew who they were. It's not kind of. He did know who they were. And he told Titus, this is what you're going to find. These are a good group of people. And so when Titus went, even though there were difficulties, he found the report to be true. And Paul's assessment of them before he sent Titus was confirmed. And that was good. So here's Titus. Now, Paul tells them that Titus has strong feelings of affection for them. So he didn't have a negative experience with them. So he has strong feelings of affection for them. So Paul rejoices because he has confidence in Corinthians, in the Corinthians and everything. Now, does that mean they can't do wrong? No. But he's confident that they'll what? They'll head in the right direction, okay? They'll head in the right direction. All right, next week we're going to talk about generosity. Okay, he's talked about that with them before.